20 pitches. He has hit two batters and given up an infield single. 2-2 on David Bote, trying to come through. And the pitch on the way. Bote drives one in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Taylor. It's got a chance. It's a grand slam. A grand slam for David Bote.
Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 123 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. I'm here with Sean Sears. And what did you do last night after the Cubs went down 3-0 and we turned off the game? Did you do anything fun?
I started watching Game of Thrones just because I figured, like, well, this at least will, you know, get my spirits back up. And then my brother calls me and is like, are you watching the Cubs game? And I was like, I was. Did they lose finally? And he's like, are you serious? He's like, David Bote said a walk-off home run. And I was like, you've got effing kidding me. I turned it back on and I was able to flip it on in time to see like them rip Bote's shirt off. But yeah,
I didn't think you actually turned it off. I kept it on, but I was just playing on my phone the whole time until Contreras got hit and I was like, okay, bases are loaded. I should pay attention.
Yeah, no, I gave up. I figured I'd go do something fun instead of sit there and watch the Cubs probably lose a game they probably should have won. But, hey, they did it. And, you know, I'm going to say that I was the reason that they won because I turned off the game and then they realized they had to do cool things without me watching. So
you're not allowed to watch any more games this year. Got it.
Welcome, Cubs fans. It's all me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. My wife was in our bedroom watching TV in there. And if she had been out, like, with me, in the family room watching the Cubs game, I 100% would have turned it off. I would have been like, all right, you win. Let's watch something else. They're down 3-0 now. They're not coming back from this. So, yeah, it was only luck that I kept the TV on. In fact, when they went down 3-0, I was kind of just like, I should find something on Netflix. But, you know, just happened to keep it on just to see what would happen because I know that the Nationals bullpen is beat up. I mean, they had Coda Glover going out there following up Max Scherzer in a 1-0 game. I guess we can recap what happened in the game. So the Cubs came back from down 2-0 in the first game of the series and won 3-2. They got destroyed 9-4 in the second game of the series. So they went into last night's contest with Max Scherzer looking to take 2 of 3. And for the first 2 hours and 55 minutes of the 2 hour and 56 minute ESPN Sunday night game, it was not looking good. Scherzer was absolutely dominant. He pitched 7 innings with 3 hits, 1 walk, and 11 strikeouts. On the other side, Cole Hamels, who we'll talk about more in depth in a minute, matched him, going 7 innings with 1 hit, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. However, Hamels' second inning walk came around to score on a sack fly, and the game remained 1-0 until the top of the 9th when the Nats broke it open with 2 more runs. In the bottom of the 9th, against Ryan Madsen, Jason Hayward hit an infield single with 1 out. Alvaro Mora was hit by a pitch. Kyle Schwarber popped out for the 2nd out. Wilson Contreras was hit by a pitch. And David Bote hit what is believed to be baseball's first 3-0, 2 out, bottom of the 9th, walk-off grand slam. Not to mention it came with 2 strikes with a pinch hitter and a rookie at the plate hitting his 3rd big league homer. So today the Cubs are off, and they will play the Brewers in the start of a 2-game set at Wrigley Field tomorrow. So let's talk about Cole Hamels.
I mean, pretty good at baseball is my assumption from yesterday's game. He was dealing. He looked great. Easily his best start as a Cub. And to do it against Max Scherzer was awesome, but also as a person that was, you know, hoping the Cubs would win, was rather frustrating because Max Scherzer is pretty good at baseball too. So it was, I mean, it was one of those things where like ESPN was playing up the matchup as like this, these two like stalwarts running into each other. And in all actuality, it's Max Scherzer's, you know, being the best pitcher in baseball. Cole Hamels is kind of, you know, been sort of so-so this year and come through the Cubs doing okay. And it turned out to be exactly what ESPN, you know, debuted it as, even though that's not what it probably was expected to be, but it was a great pitching matchup and Cole Hamels dazzled yesterday.
Before we talk too much more about Hamels, I put together an ESPN broadcast bingo card before the game, and it really took off because they started checking off the items. I feel like if it hadn't been such an amazing pitching duel, If this was like a 7-0 game, I probably would have checked every box on this thing. But here are the ones that I checked off for the ESPN broadcast. They talked about the home run derby. They showed a famous Cubs fan on TV. It was Bill Murray. Laughing for no reason. Got that one. Talking about Rizzo in the leadoff spot. A-Rod just holding a baseball. Nailed it.
A couple times.
Talking about the St. Louis Cardinals. I almost didn't get that one. I think they talked about it in the 9th inning. About the Cardinals sneaking up on the Cubs. So got that one. Mindless banter and ignoring the game. See, again, that's one that I feel like would have been a sure thing, but it wasn't until I think Carl Edwards was pitching in the 8th that they finally did it. They were talking about their fantasy football teams, and they had 2 pitches go by from Edwards without a mention of the baseball game while they were talking about fantasy football. So knocked that one off. Let's see. Hamels no-hitter highlights. Any Clayton Kershaw mention? Any mention of the 2000s Yankees? the phrase Yu Darvish and the phrase Cy Young. I got all of those. I missed a few. We would have had a bingo if anyone had said that the game has too many strikeouts, which considering there was like 23 strikeouts in the game, it would have been, it was like on a T form, but they didn't. And let's see, if anyone had mentioned Schwarber's weight loss, we would have had a bingo. So came up short on this one, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's probably one of the few ways to stay entertained through an ESPN broadcast. It's, man, Sunday Night Baseball has just lost its luster as like being like an awesome thing to watch, especially now that like we can literally get baseball at any point by just looking at our phones. It's different, but yeah, gosh, MLB broadcast, like it's frustrating because I like, for the most part, I like their commentators they use. Like I like Jessica Mendoza. I'm not a big A-Rod fan, but I do think he has interesting things to say sometimes. But there's just periods where it's just like dead, boring baseball, and it's brutal. It's like they themselves get bored from the game, so they're like, well, let's entertain ourselves. It's like, no, that's not.
Yeah, I would say that right along those lines, they're decent as a group when they're engaged with talking about the game. Yeah. Like yesterday, there was plenty to talk about with Scherzer and Hamels and the Cubs and the Nats. So like, it seemed like for the most part, they were talking about the game. And that was relatively interesting. I like Jessica Mendoza and the way that she breaks down the game. Although I have my complaints about her as like she's crapped on analytics a whole bunch of times. And, you know, some of the things she says is like, no, don't say that, Jessica. But overall, like she's a good analyst. A-Rod, I prefer as a studio analyst because when they go to him in the studio, like on MLB Network, he's actually like they're teeing up something for him to actually break down. It's either like hitter's mechanics or, you know, like a specific play in a game or how a player's doing. He's really good at that. But just having those conversations, like we've seen it before, it's not always good with him. I'm okay with Vasgersian. He says some things sometimes that are pretty dumb. Like the complaining about bachelorette parties at the ballpark. Like it was like, come on, dude, don't do that. But other than that, like I like him. I like his Santa Maria call, and I almost put that on the broadcast bingo card, but I didn't. I was kicking myself after the game because I know he pretty much only does that for walk-off homers now, I think. So I was kicking myself I didn't put it on there.
I mean, who could have thought? We thought the Cubs were going to lose until, you know, 4 seconds after David Bodie hit that home run. So, yeah, I like Matt Vasgersian. There's a little bit of nostalgia there for me because he's been like the voice of like the MLB The Show games for like the past decade. So that's always interesting. But yeah, everything else you said about A-Rod is very much correct. He's great when he can show you something that you don't know about baseball, like the side of baseball that like Alex Rodriguez is, you know, very clearly aware of and knows what he's talking about. But then there's moments where like he's just kind of like blabbering on about something that doesn't really, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, I get what you're saying, but you were just like taking some extreme liberties here on national television that I don't think anyone else would. So
right, and he's doing it because he's A-Rod and he can.
Yeah, he just loves to hear, the man loves to hear himself talk about himself. That's, you know, one thing.
Something that guys doing a daily podcast probably shouldn't. We shouldn't be throwing stones about loving to hear the sound of his own voice. Let's get into Cole Hamels a little bit. Like I said, 7 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk. They both unfortunately came in the same inning. It was a walk to Ryan Zimmerman leading off the second, and then a little stupid nubber by Daniel Murphy right down the third baseline, beating the shift. It was like just fair inside the line. A guy that actually has two real legs, probably that's a double, but it was a single for him. Ryan Zimmerman went first to third, so it was first and third, nobody out. Hamels got the next three guys, but unfortunately the next guy was a sac fly to right field. Jason Hayward, probably within Jason Hayward throwing you out range with a slow runner at third, but the throw was just a little offline. So there was a lot of like margin for error in that second inning where they scored their one run that like the Cubs easily could have kept them off the board, but just a sequence of events just didn't go Cole Hamels' way.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. It was just Cole Hamels doing great stuff, but the Nationals, they do have a great, they, I mean, not great, it's been down this year, but they do have a solid lineup. And I mean, Daniel Murphy is pretty great at putting contact on the ball, especially with two strikes. I mean, you know, you chalk it up as whatever, but yeah, it was going to be a frustrating night if the Cubs lost 1-0 to the Nationals after Cole Hamels pitched as well as he did.
Right, and for better perspective on, I mean, Scherzer was great too. Don't get me wrong, 11 strikeouts. He did allow 4 base runners. He allowed 3 hits. So I feel like, despite the fact that Hamels gave up the one run and was on the hook for the loss, that Hamels was actually in many ways out pitching him, which, you know, it's like by a tiny margin. But the point is, if Daniel Murphy, instead of like squibbing one down the third baseline just fair, if that one goes foul and the next pitch is a ground ball to second base for a double play, we could be talking about Cole Hamels' no hitter, not perfect game, but you know, no hitter facing the minimum at least, if the game goes as scripted the rest of the way, because nobody else got on base against him, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, he didn't have any other base runners pretty much throughout the night. That was the one and only real chance the Nationals had to score against him. They took advantage of it, but yeah, I mean, there's not much more you can say about Cole Hamels. The guy just looked like vintage Cole Hamels. He was right. Deep. His changeup looked great. Cutter was executing. He was hitting his spots. He was getting some calls, which helps. But I mean, when you're pitching like you are, I mean, you're going to get those calls when you're consistently nailing those corners. So yeah, it was a very encouraging start for a rotation that has a lot of questions with some guys that, you know, were considered, you know, the guys you're going to lean on. John Lester, Kyle Hendricks, you know, although I wouldn't necessarily look at Kyle Hendricks' most recent start and be like, God, this guy needs to figure it out. But, you know, there's still some concerns with just about everyone in that rotation. So Hamels coming in with these three starts and bringing some, I don't know, not sustainability yet. It's not the word I'm looking for, but he's reliable at this point. I could say you could probably get five to six good innings out of him. I don't think you get the starts he did last night all the time, but, you know, 5-6 innings of 1 or 2 run baseball is great. And that's, you know, all you can ask for a guy like him.
Yeah. And I remember back to Theo Epstein talking about when Hamels was first acquired, he was saying that, you know, something that they saw in him was related to like the pitch mix or the pitch usage. And they were thinking maybe if he used his fastball a little more frequently again, like he had stopped using his fastballs frequently. And they thought that if he was throwing it effectively for pitches, they could kind of not necessarily fix a problem, but just, you know, get him back on track this year. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know they put him up on ESPN last night that he's been throwing his fastball more frequently since coming to the Cubs. So it sounds like they've got him back on a track that they like. And the point that a lot of people made, including myself, when they acquired him, despite those ugly numbers throughout that bad stretch before he got acquired and sent to the Cubs, he had held his velocity and actually it had ticked up a little bit. So the velocity was fine and the stuff was fine. So really, I think this is, you know, are we going to see, you know, a 1.00 ERA from him? Is he going to be the Justin Verlander of the Cubs in 2018? I don't think he's going to be that great, but are we going to see a very good top of the rotation style Cole Hamels the rest of the way against this National League, against the Cubs' favorable schedule? Yeah, I think it's not all that unlikely. And, you know, if he does pitch that way, where are we talking about lining him up in the playoff rotation?
I mean, you know, people were joking on Twitter last night that he's the game one NLDS starter. It's like
guilty.
No, that wasn't mean to be. That wasn't meant to be directed at you, Ryan. A lot of people are saying it, but yeah, I mean, like he's probably a guy you got to throw in the rotation. I would say you probably play off matchups, but his pedigree. If he's going to pitch like he did last night in the postseason, sure, yeah, I'll put him in game two. I still think John Lester's probably the guy you want to go there. Maybe Hendricks and then Cole Hamels. Go left, right, left, maybe. I'm not sure. It depends on, I guess, how Yu Darvish is doing or whatnot. But I would say Hamels has to be one of those four starters at this point.
Yeah, I mean, with Hendricks looking better lately, I know like the results haven't been amazing for him his last few starts. But he has looked much better lately. With that, I think he's nailed down a number two or number three spot in that rotation, at least for right now. John Lester's been really bad the last few games. It's getting to the point where he hasn't been great for the most part this year. He had some really great results despite his peripherals early.
Right.
I'm not saying that this guy has fallen off completely or that he's regressed or age has gotten him. I think there was some regression due early in the season and we've gotten there, but I guess the point is we have a month and a half left of John Lester. If he continues at this pace, that's a difficult decision for Joe Maddon, because not only is he definitely not the guy you throw out in game one, that's, you know, if you get Yu Darvish back and he's healthy and he's pitching well, then you have, you know, Hamels, Darvish, Quintana, and Hendricks, and then you have John Lester getting pounded. That's a tough call. That's something that I wouldn't envy Joe Maddon having to do. And he had to do the same thing with John Lackey last year, where you had this guy who had all this playoff success in his career, and you had to tell him that he was going to the bullpen. I don't know if that's going to happen with John Lester. We're a little early for that to be a serious discussion, but that's something that I fear may be a conversation at the very least among fans and media in like a month or so.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's a good point. The last two starts, I've been motivated to like look into like his most recent starts and figure out what the issue is. And honestly, there's nothing like data wise that's like concrete where it's like, this is the issue. I mean, clearly he's walking more. His stuff doesn't have as much movement or bite on it. He's still throwing for decent velocity, but it seems like it's coming across more flat. And he's been talking about it in his last like four post games. He says he just can't execute that out pitch. He doesn't have a pitch right now. And it seems like when he needs to get the swing and miss or get the soft contact, he can't execute that pitch. So, I mean, honestly, a lot of it probably just comes down to he's 34 years old and he doesn't have the stuff he had before. And maybe, I mean, the big pitch that was really working for him and then going to the cutter with that pitch was really like, you know, his bread and butter. It's not working. And then to your point about Cole Hamels, fastball usage from April was at about 20%, according to Brooks Baseball, has jumped up to 31% in August so far. So big increase for Cole Hamels for fastball usage.
Yeah, well, there you go. So let's go ahead and wrap on that. Let's talk about the big hero of last night. We'll go to our second segment. So David Bodie saved the day, and this isn't the first time he's done it. Len Casper tweeted last night that he said something like that was fun. And I tweeted at him and I said, that's definitely a top three all time David Bodie home run. And I mean, what are his three home runs are this one, the game tire against the Diamondbacks, where it was a 2-run homer to tie it with two outs in the ninth inning. Then Rizzo followed it with the game winner. And then the other one is his first major league home run. So I guess he's making them count, right?
Yeah. I mean, the dude is making sure you don't forget David Bodie, which is very interesting. Cause if you were to see David Bodie, he looks like the most average looking, you know, normal American person you could see, but yeah, he, is smacking the crap out of baseballs is what I think the technical term is called.
Yeah, right. No, last night he smacked the crap out of that one. It was exit velocity of 110, and he hit it about 445 or 450 feet to dead center field into the wind, by the way. I don't know, it wasn't blowing in like really hard, but it was blowing in. There was at least one ball, I think it was Zobrist hit it, that looked like a homer to right field, and it was maybe like a foot short. That was smack.
Yeah, the wind was definitely blowing in. I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter yet, but they did there's like the Titanic like videos they always do when like dramatic happens. They added that to the David Bowie home run, and I'm not embarrassed to say it gave me chills. it seemed like it was too perfect of a situation. But yeah, I mean, you can't say enough about David Bowie. This guy has done everything the Cubs have asked him to do, and then some. Fits in any role. I know Joe Madden's talking about getting him some reps in the outfield just so they can be more flexible when Chris Bryant comes back. I mean, at this point, I think it's safe to assume David Bowie has cemented himself in this Cubs roster, at least for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I can't imagine him going back down to AAA at any point this year. And really, I don't see a reason for him to need to, because I don't think there's any chance Bryant is back on the roster before September 1st when the rosters expand anyway. So, but I mean, just looking at the position side, I don't see anyone that could go down other than David Bowie if he did return. So, I think Bryant comes back, and cross your fingers at the beginning of September, and Bowie is here to stay. Looking at his slash line, 91 plate appearances, 329 batting, 418 on base, 539 slugging, OPS plus of 150, which is by far and away the best on the team, but obviously in a small sample. Five doubles, a triple, three homers, 18 RBI, three stolen bases. He has four caught stealings, which kind of surprised me. But right now, Joe Madden said before that he wants to get him, that he's banging on the door for every day kind of playing. And I know there's few players in this lineup that are everyday guys that don't get a break here and there, but I feel like right now he should be taking a lot of the time either at second or third base with Baez at the other one. Mm-hmm. But when you got to get Zobrist in there as well, especially with how hot he's been in the second half, I think it's fair to discuss Addison Russell may be the guy who's starting to lose some playing time. The stats for him since June 1st are not good. A 578 OPS in 130 plate appearances. I think that this is the guy who's going to be losing some time to Bowie coming in the next couple weeks. And if he doesn't get it turned around, even playing favorable matchups in the next few weeks, when Bryant comes back, we could be talking about, you know, Addison Russell going Avengers Infinity War and just fading away.
Yeah, that seems like an astute assumption there, honestly. He's just been not great. And the biggest thing, too, is like you aren't losing that much with David Bowie's glove. His arm may be on par with Russell's in terms of like arm strength wise. But yeah, I mean, like that's the big thing here. Bowie, at least when you leave Bowie in the lineup, just to keep his bat in there, you're not losing much with the glove. And I think that'll be an easy transition. Side note, David Bowie right now, according to Isolated Strength, is second on the team. He's back for Kyle Schwarber at 211. Of course, Hobby's at 280. He's been close to 300 all year. But David Bowie does not look like your normal, typical masher of baseballs, but that's literally all the guy does. He just maxed baseballs.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I even underrated his bat speed and just how good it was early in his stint with the Cubs. I remember saying, like, comparing him with Javi Baez. He doesn't have the bat speed of Baez, but he's, you know, he makes great contact and he's an intelligent hitter. He knows what he's doing. He has a game plan. Looking at that swing again yesterday and a few of the other swings in his little highlight package that's been built since he's come to the big leagues, I'm starting to notice just how quick his bat is. Mm-hmm. And he's got great bat speed. It's obviously not Baez territory, but I would say the contact ability with the bat speed that he has and the fact that he's able to barrel up the ball so well, I'm thinking that this is a guy who really could have a very long major league career. And I heard Jeff Passan talking about him on the radio. When he was asked about him, he basically said, "I'm not willing to say anything about David Bowie yet because the league is building a book on him and they're, you know, going to learn to adjust to him, and it's up to him whether he adjusts back." And we haven't seen that yet, so we don't want to get too excited, but you know, the makings of a decent baseball player are there, and with how hard he's worked, you know, just to get to this point, it would be hard to believe that he wouldn't be able to work hard enough and figure out how to adjust to the league and continue to have really good success.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point. For passing in you there. I mean, the league is just starting to get used to David Bodie. They're seeing what this guy can do. His bat speed clearly has been impressive. I think everyone's just kind of been taken back by how much of an impact he's having on a team that has so many well-known superstars and, like, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the, like, lineup card spots. So maybe not superstars, but really good, well-known players. So it's interesting to see a guy like David Bodie just come out, not necessarily out of nowhere, but just have the massive impact he's having. But yeah, I think to an extent too. I mean, David Bodie's done nothing but work and continue to work and came from essentially nowhere to being one of the most important people on this Cubs roster right now. So yeah, I would say it's safe to assume at least that David Bodie's going to carve himself a role. I don't think he's going to be walk-off hero player every night and, you know, do these crazy things all the time, but he's going to find ways to be effective for this Cubs team. And that's huge as a guy that, you know, maybe is a utility guy or maybe he turns into a starter in a couple of years. Who knows? But yeah, for right now, David Bodie has been nothing short but clutch for this Cubs team right now.
Yeah, no, I've said this on a few podcasts now, but my ideal situation, I think, for him is that in the offseason, the Cubs find a deal for Addison Russell and get him a fresh start somewhere else. And maybe they swap him for somebody else's high talent but disappointing player. And then the rotation is essentially Baez at shortstop and then Bodie and Zobrist kind of sharing some time at second base. And then occasionally Baez gets a day off and Bodie goes to short or Zobrist goes to the outfield, that kind of thing. So that's kind of what I feel like if this is, if they believe that this is for real and that, you know, maybe David Bodie's not a 950 OPS type guy, but if they believe that he is a quality everyday baseball player with his excellent defense and everything else that he does, I feel like that's the move.
Yeah, I'm there with you. As unfortunate as it was, because I had a lot of hope for Addison Russell. I thought he could be, after his 2015 season, I thought he could be an MVP type player just because of the lack of power you see at shortstop, even though, you know, shortstops are smashing balls like crazy now as well this year and the last couple of years. But yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to work out in the way the Cubs want it to. Addison Russell just seems like he needs to go to a different place where he can be successful in his own way. And not trying to fit in with the Cubs because just doesn't seem like it's working out in multiple ways. So we've hit on all those reasons before, but
yeah. And the funny thing is about it is Addison Russell obviously has the talent, and sometimes players are late bloomers and they come on late. And I think David Bodie's a good example of that, as a guy who struggled very early in his professional career and was in the minors for a long time. And the funny thing that somebody said to me when I was talking about this was, well, maybe when Addison Russell is David Bodie's age, he's hitting like David Bodie. and I was like, oh yeah, David Bodie's like over a year older than Russell, isn't he?
Yeah, that's a great point. David Bodie is, I mean, he's a rookie, but he is, I mean, there's guys in this Cubs roster that are clearly a lot younger than him. Ian Happ, Addison Russell. I think Schwarber is the same age as him, right? I think they're close.
Yeah, I think they're the same age. Ian Happ, and I think there's been at least a case that he's another guy that David Bodie is kind of pushing past him on the roster, but David Bodie's 2 years older than Ian Happ.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Happ's 23, I think, right?
Right, yeah, he's the youngest guy on the team, or at least on the positional side.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good situation to have when you've got options of guys in the infield, which is crazy to think because, you know, we were looking at the farm system last year and being like, God, Gleyber Torres would be great right about now. But hey, we have David Bodie now and everything's perfect.
Right. Well, I guess we can stop talking about David Bodie. We can go to our final segment and chat a little bit about how the NL Central is shaken up and maybe talk a little bit about some update on Chris Bryant. So yesterday, the Brewers lost thanks to a late rally from the Atlanta Braves. Milwaukee was up 7-5 heading to the bottom of the sixth, but the Braves ended up pulling out an 8-7 win. The St. Louis Cardinals won and swept the Kansas City Royals by a score of 8-2. Cardinals have now won 5 in a row, 8 of 10, and 5 consecutive series. The Pirates lost to the Giants 4-3, while the Reds fell to the Diamondbacks 9-2. So the updated standings are: the Cubs are 68-49, the Brewers are 67-54, 3 games back. The Cardinals are 63-55, 5.5 back. The Pirates are 61-58, 8 back. And the Reds are 52-66, 16.5 games back. So the Brewers, fortunately, they lost. The Cubs were very close to allowing them to be within 2 of the division heading into this two-game series with them. The Cardinals were very nearly 4.5 games out, which I felt like getting them under 5 is like a big problem. And like that's that kind of like barrier where if they're over 5 games back, you kind of feel okay about keeping them at that arm's distance. But under 5 games back with a month and a half to go seems very much like you're allowing this team back into it, especially with how hot they've been. Firing Mike Matheny and turning over their roster a little bit and getting rid of some of the bad players like Greg Holland and Tyler Lyons. And, Tommy Pham has not necessarily a bad player, but a guy who had been struggling. So that's a team that I would be a little fearful of allowing back into the divisional race.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Cardinals are just the team that are going to be sticking around for a while. But I think five, six games pretty much probably if we pick up from there for like a week or two, I think you could probably assume that they're okay. But yeah, I mean, you get a team under 5 games, 4.5, 4 games. I mean, that's a series. You know, you could lose that division in just one series, just one bad series. So giving them that space is huge. 3 games up on Milwaukee, that I'm so happy about that. Like, that's such a huge thing because it looked like the way the Cubs are playing, I mean, if they didn't pull this win out, they'd still be okay, I guess. But, how big does this win and Milwaukee loss look now, even just with David Bodie walk-off, right? I mean, this it's a huge, huge win here for the Cubs to go, especially with Milwaukee coming into town later this week. That's – a big plus, big help there.
Right now the Brewers will either be 1 game back, 3 games back, or 5 games back after this series, which is way better than, you know, either being tied 2 games back or 4 games back. So yeah, I would say at the very minimum, you know, the Cubs split this series, you feel okay checking 2 games off and keeping the Brewers still 3 out.
Yeah I think that's what you got to look at it as. I mean, clearly, you got to win every game you can against the Brewers at this point, just because it's going to – I mean, clearly, they're your division rival. They're right behind you. Putting as much space as you can directly with them is huge. Giving yourself advantages if there were, for some reason, some random tie or whatever it may be. So that's big. Cubs are in a good position to really take advantage of. I just hope they do. I can't sit through another game where you know, someone throws a fantastic almost no-hitter, one hitter through 6 innings, 7 innings, and – you know, we have to pray for David Bodie walk-off to win a game. So,
yeah, and interesting little factoid. This is something David Bodie ended up embarrassing me slightly because in the top of the 9th inning when they went down 3-0, I started tweeting about this kind of 10-game stretch where it's been really unimpressive against the Padres and the Royals and the Nationals. And, you know, coming into the series, the Nationals were basically a 500 team and they've got injuries in the bullpen. It was way too detailed to get into on Twitter, but I referred to how the Cubs have played in a stretch where essentially it was perceived as, quote, an easy 10-game stretch. And then I had like 40 people tweeting me, even like, the Nationals aren't easy. Why are you calling the Nationals easy? And I was like, I'm not saying the Nationals are easy. I'm saying the 10-game stretch as a whole is easy. And it should have been. And the Cubs ended up going 6-4 because they pulled out that win and they took 2 of 3 from the Royals and 2 of 3 from the Nationals, and they split with the Padres, which is really the ugly part of it, where you were thinking they should easily take 3 of 4. But the major point is they lost the games they lost 6-1 to the Padres, 10-6 to the Padres, 9-0 to the Royals, 9-4 to the Nationals. The games they won 5-4, 5-4, 3-1, 5-0, 3-2, 4-3. So 4 of those 6 are one-run games where they didn't score many runs. In total, in this 6-4 stretch against these 10 games, the Cubs scored 36 runs, so that's 3.6 runs per game. You would think that any offense against the Padres and the Royals should be able to pile up the runs, but the Cubs just didn't do it. They have the Brewers and then the Pirates, the Tigers, the Reds and the Mets, so they still have some easy teams coming up on their schedule before they hit the real bad stretch where they go on a road trip at the end of August, where it's Atlanta, then Philadelphia, then Milwaukee, then Washington, and then home for Milwaukee. That's like their big bad stretch for the rest of the year. I feel like we're back having the same conversation. The Cubs need to take advantage of You know, obviously the Brewers aren't an easy team, but this upcoming stretch is mostly teams that are out of contention. They need to get the offense going and actually win these games.
Yeah, that's really the big thing here. This Cubs offense has got to figure it out. They've got to find ways to push these runners that are getting on base on through into home plate. Like, they just, that's what killed us. I mean, you see the us, I keep saying, gosh, not us. I'm not a participant in this. I just talk about it for a living. Yeah, the offense has got to find a way to figure out the score runs. That's what's going to win these games at this point, just because, I mean, you know, we've talked about it a bunch, and we thought maybe the pitching at one point could have carried this team, and I think for certain games it can at this point, but the Cubs' best way of winning at this point is scoring 5-6 runs a game. And that seems like the hardest thing to ask them to do at this point, but they have to find a way to do it. They got to consistently do it, and they've got all the pieces, it seems like, on the roster individually to do it. It just seems like collectively, when they need those hits or they need someone to, you know, step up and push a run or ball through the gap or whatever, you know, they look out and get a walk sometimes, or they strike out, or they hit a double play, or they get a sac fly. They don't get those big innings. They don't have that chance where, you know, they hit a double and clear the bases. That doesn't happen too much this year. That's the difference between, you know, a 5 or 6 game lead in the division to a 1 to 2 game lead. So,
right. And when those things do happen, they happen, you know, relatively early in the game, and they ended up scoring like 13 runs in that game, right, and padding those stats and becoming the highest run scoring team in the National League.
Exactly.
The majority of those games, they're just not doing that.
Exactly. It's either like they're on and they're going to score 10 plus runs, or, you know, it's a 3-run game that the Cubs have to pray that their bullpen and their pitching can keep the other side's offense together. And it just doesn't seem like that happens. Or, you know, they score 4 and the Cubs can only muster 2. And it's a frustrating game of baseball to watch when the Cubs can't push runs through, especially when you're looking at a guy like Javier Baez, who's an MVP candidate, at least, you know, was considered one coming into this weekend series and didn't necessarily show that much in these last couple games. So.
Yeah, and their recent stretch where they went 6-4, where I'm kind of like ringing the alarm bell, where it looked like it was going to be 5-5. 36 runs in those 10 games against those teams is, you know, kind of alarming. It reminds me a lot of when everyone was kind of dancing on the Brewers' grave early in the season when the Cubs swept them in a 4-game set. But the Cubs only scored like 8 runs in those 4 games. and everyone was like dancing all over the Brewers. And I was like, wait, but you see there's a problem here, right? Like, the Cubs aren't scoring right now. The offense is not moving. And coming into these two against the Brewers, obviously Milwaukee's not playing very well right now either. But it is an issue of the offense needs to get going. Chris Bryant returning could help that. And we're still, like we said earlier, probably at least 2 weeks away from that. But it sounds like he said that he's pain-free in his shoulder now. He's not swinging yet, but he said that he's going to start taking like some dry swings later, which I assume means swinging a baseball bat without like a baseball flying at it. But at least that's progress, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's better than him swinging and being hurt. So they're going to take their time. I think it's safe to assume that, you know, the three main guys that are hurt now being, you know, Bryant, Darvish, and probably Morrow, all three of them probably don't come back till September call-ups, just because of the logistics of it make more sense that way. But, you know,
yeah,
we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, Chris Bryant to this roster with David Bodie swinging a hot bat makes me very excited.
Yeah, that's I think that's best case scenario. If all three of them are activated on September 1st or like September 1st or 2nd, that would be really like best case scenario. If I had to put my money down, I'd say Morrow and Bryant are activated on September 1st, and then Darvish at some point within the next few days. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Fingers crossed, man. That's all we can do at this point. Cubs are in a good spot. That's good. They just got to help themselves out. They don't seem to want to do that.
Yeah. And hopefully the Cardinals keep losing, because the final three games of the season are at Wrigley Field against the St. Louis Cardinals. So if the Cardinals remain hot and maybe get within 3 games with those last 3 games at Wrigley, it'd be cool to see the Cubs clinch against the Cardinals again. But that's not a series you want to go into thinking about, you know, the Cardinals still having divisional hopes.
Yeah, that's true. You want to hope you come in that situation, you're like, all right, it's done. You know, we can do whatever we need to at this point. I don't know if that happens, but, you know, it would be nice.
And before that, they have 4 with the Pirates. But the series prior to that is 3 on the south side against the White Sox. How cool would it be to see the Cubs clinch the division against the White Sox at US Cellular? That'd be kind of surreal, right?
It'd be very, very cool. It's one of the last times I played the Sox this late, because usually I feel like it's like they play each other in June or July, where like they play either like the two-game thing, or they like play back in like 2009 and 10, they would play like a 3-game series on the weekend at Wrigley, break for the week, and then come back the next week at US Cellular, when it was US Cellular. So I always like those series. I like that it's split up. I hate when they run into each other at the beginning of the year and don't see each other the rest of the season. Maybe
the Cubs could pull a twofer and clinch the division and the Crosstown Cup on the same day.
I mean, that would be pretty cool.
The all-important Crosstown Cup. Well, all right. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 123 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, here with Sean Sears, as always. Thanks for listening again, and be sure to check out our giveaway. We have the ticket giveaway going on. You can find that on Locked On Cubs on Twitter. You can go to our main pinned tweet and read about how to enter to win tickets. And I think I've covered everything.
Yeah. You guys are entering in that ticket sweepstakes. We want to send you to a game. Hopefully it's not behind a pole, but we'll see.
Yeah, it may be behind a pole. I'm not going to lie. I don't make enough money off of this to buy expensive tickets. I'm going to be looking for the cheapest thing possible.
But yeah, I mean, either way, you're at Wrigley Field. You're going to enjoy it. So.
Right. All right. We will talk to you guys again tomorrow.